Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation, text number 54. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Nashoshiti Nakangshiti. Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu. Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Brahma Bhuta. Being one with the Absolute, Prasanatma, fully joyful, na, never, Shoshati, laments, na, never, Kangshati, desires, Samak, equally disposed, Sarveshu, to all. Bhuteshu, living entities, Mad Bhaktim, my devotional service, Labhate, gains, Param, transcendental. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who is thus transcendently situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Purport to the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. But for the personalist or pure devotee, one has to go still further, become engaged in pure devotional service. This means that one who is engaged in pure devotional service to the Lord is already in a state of liberation called Brahma-Bhuta, oneness with the Absolute. Without being one with the Supreme or the Absolute, one cannot render service unto Him. In the Absolute conception, there is no difference between the served and the servitor, yet the distinction is there in a higher spiritual sense. In the material concept of life, when one works for sense gratification, there is misery. But in the Absolute world, when one is engaged in pure devotional service, there is no misery. The devotee in Krishna consciousness has nothing for which to lament or desire. Since God is full, a living entity who is engaged in God's service in Krishna consciousness becomes also full in himself. He is like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Because a pure devotee has no thought other than Krishna, he is naturally always joyful. He does not lament for any material loss or aspire for gain, because he is full in the service of the Lord. He has no desire for material enjoyment, because he knows that every living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and therefore eternally a servant. He does not see in the material world someone as higher and someone as lower. Higher and lower positions are ephemeral. And a devotee has nothing to do with the ephemeral appearances or disappearances. For him, stone and gold are of equal value. This is the Brahma-Bhuta stage. And this stage is obtained very easily by the pure devotee. In that state of existence, the idea of becoming one with the Supreme Brahman, annihilating one's individuality, becomes hellish. The idea of attaining the heavenly kingdom becomes phantasmagoria. And the senses are like serpents' teeth that are broken. As there is no fear of a serpent with broken teeth, there is no fear from the senses when they are automatically controlled. The world is miserable for the materially infected person, but for a devotee, the entire world is as good as Vaikuntha, or the spiritual sky. The highest personality in this universe is no more significant than an ant for a devotee. Such a stage can be achieved by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, preach pure devotional service in this age. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Prasoshiti Nakangshiti Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. One who is thus transcendently situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires of anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Throughout this 18th chapter, which is a summary for the rest of the Bhagavad Gita, Then Krishna has elaborately gone over the three modes in terms of how a worker works according to the modes, what his intelligence is, what his knowledge is, what his determination is, what his happiness is. And now he's come to the platform of detachment. And then Krishna says, everyone's going to be working in the material world, according to the three modes of material nature, and have different types of occupations, according to those the three modes. And everyone in the whole universe is working like that, not just here, but everywhere. And then Krishna says that one can attain perfection if one simply serves Krishna in any of these situations. But what is that perfection? Now, Krishna, sometimes he jumps, or he doesn't jump. He goes from the Varnashram conception of gradually coming up to the mode of goodness, becoming a Brahmin, and then he comes up to the platform of becoming a transcendentalist from Karma Yoga, which includes the Shudras and the Vaishyas, to Jnana Yoga, which includes the Kshatriyas and the Brahmins, and then you have the yogis at the stage of Astanga Yoga. And then beyond that you have the Bhaktas at the stage of Buddha Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. So the whole idea is to come to Bhakti Yoga. Without coming to Bhakti Yoga, one remains in the material platform. Even Astanga Yoga can only bring one to the Brahman platform, which is explained here. But the Brahman platform is the preliminary platform before one can actually become a Vaishnava or work as a on the spiritual platform. Brahmabhuta brings one to the platform of spiritual understanding, but then one has to work on that platform. Generally, the impersonalists come to the platform of spiritual understanding that everyone is Brahman, but they don't work on that platform, so they can't stay in that platform forever. They usually fall down to the lower platforms eventually. But the Brahmabhuta platform, which is explained here very simply compared to all these other verses, all about the three modes and how they're working. The whole idea is to get free from two things. Well, actually three. Hankering and lamentation. Material world is the first lecture I heard Prabhupada give. One of the first things he said in the lecture, this is in Buffalo in 1969, he said, in the material world, we only have two occupations, hankering for what we don't have and lamenting what we lost. That sums up the material world. And on the basis of that, we form relationships with others. Those who can give us, think we can get something from them, they become our friends. Those who can take things away from us become our enemies. And everyone else is useless. We're indifferent in different ways to them. Indifferent. So, as Queen Kunti said in the Srimad Bhagavatam in her prayers, the problems in the material world are due to social intercourse. In other words, this hankering lamentation creates different problems in our relationships with others. And if one can give up this hankering lamentation, then at least the person who gives it up doesn't have any more problems. Because then he can see everyone equally. Like Krishna. No one can give anything to Krishna because he owns everything. And no one can take anything away from him because he owns everything. And one knows he doesn't own anything, Krishna owns anything, then there's nothing to hanker for because he can't get anything. So he's Krishna's. And you can't lament over losing something that you never had in the first place. Therefore, you don't look at people, what they can give you or what they might take away from you, because you have nothing. You have nothing. There's nothing to take away. There's nothing to gain because you can't get anything. It always belongs to Krishna. And the only thing we have a conception that it belongs to me, and because of that conception, therefore we become entangled in our own consciousness, and that entanglement manifests itself in relationships with others. Or that misconception manifests itself in relation to others. makes unpleasant relationships with others, we can say. People who are hankering and lamenting can't be very pleasant to be with. Because you always get this feeling they want something from you, or they're afraid you're going to take something from them, either gross or subtly. So to come to the Brahma Buddha platform, the 53 verses before this have been explained in the 18th chapter. And now we're just dealing, give up hankering and lamentation, so you can see everyone equally. So this is also elaborately explained in the second chapter of the Nectar of Devotion, called Eligibility for Devotional Service. Now our eligibility, obviously, we're generally not overly concerned about sitting down and controlling the intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, etc., as the last verse, which is the perfection of Astanga Yoga, explains. We're not usually concerned with that. We are concerned with just chanting our rounds without offense, though. Just chanting and listening. And why can't we chant without offense? What's the main thing? What's the main offense that keeps us from inattentiveness? And why are we inattentive? What are we? Why are we inattentive? Because we're caught up in hankering and lamentation. So if we just pay attention and not get caught up, what we're hankering for, oh, if only things could be like this. If I go back to my time machine, the first grade, and do my math class, do my test over, I could have gotten 100. Stop lamenting over what happened in the past. And then hankering, oh, if I can only arrange things in this way, everything was going to be perfect. We're in the material world where nothing can ever be perfect. Because it's always imperfect. We're in the material world. The only thing that can become perfect is we can get perfectly out of here by becoming perfectly Krishna conscious. But we're never going to make the material world perfect. We can make our consciousness Krishna conscious, and that's our perfection. So, here it says if we just chant our rounds nicely, chant and listen, and then if we chant with some feeling and then try to understand, look at people differently instead of trying to see them, how we can exploit them, see how we can serve them. In other words, the perfection is not just to give up hankering and lamentation, realize I'm Brahman, but the perfection is to go deeper as a servant, as the next verse says, to look at others and see in the six loving exchanges how I can appropriately apply them, because that's bhakti. Bhakti doesn't mean that we just love Krishna and everyone else is useless. No, bhakti means we see everyone and we try to see how we can appropriately serve them, to bring them to a closer relationship with Krishna. So that's only possible where our minds are not trying to figure out how to exploit people, instead of trying to how to serve them. And as long as we're hankering, lamenting in the material world over this gross and subtle body, to some degree or another, we're going to look at others, how they're going to be serving my body, my ego, whatever else. Instead of trying to see how we can serve them, we're going to try to figure out what they have to do to serve me. Unfortunately, no one came to the material world to serve anyone else. So as soon as we want others to serve us, then we have to get entangled in material business. As Prahlad Maharaj, when Nrisimhadeva offered him a benediction for his devotional service, he refused to accept it. He said, I'm not a businessman. But as soon as we engage in hankering lamentation, since no one came here to serve us, we have to become engaged with other beings in this world, especially other people. We have to reciprocate with them to get them to satisfy our needs. We have to satisfy their needs. And of course, no one's needs are ever completely satisfied in the material world, because it's not possible. Because lust is never satisfied. It burns like fire. And anger is never satisfied by manifesting it. nor is greed. Did you ever meet a greedy people, person who gets tired of being greedy? Pretty rare. The more greedy you become, the more greedy you become. As the wealthiest person in this world, Howard Hughes was once asked, now that you have so many billions of dollars, what do you want? And he said, I want more money. He felt insecure. He only had $16 billion, which at that time was like $160 billion. And he felt insecure. He needed more money. And when to speak of lust, did you ever find a lusty person? He said, oh, I'm tired of lust. I'll just give it up. Or anger, frustration. No, it can't be given up without Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness can't be actually manifested until we try to act in relation with others without trying to see them as the objects of our exploitation to satisfy our what our needs are. Instead, we have to see what other people's needs are, and we have to see other people's needs. Ultimately, they have practical needs, but ultimately they also have spiritual needs. As we were saying in Purpose for Yatra, people have a need to be appreciated, loved, and accepted. Everyone has that need. And therefore, in relation with devotees, that's the main thing. It's just, with all our philosophy, it boils down to that. To just appreciate people and accept them. Or we can say love them and accept them. That's all people really want. That's our whole philosophy. And that's only possible when we come to the Brahma Buddha platform. When we don't have to feel like people are threatening us or we have to get something from them. Then we can actually accept them for what they are and we can appreciate them for what they are. And not try to exploit, get something from them. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Krishna Maharaj, you said that the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are on the Jnana Yoga platform and Kshatriyas, it didn't make sense for me.
Kshatriya, well, how can you be a Kshatriya unless you know what Dharma is? This Dharma, Artha, this Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha. So how can you be a Kshatriya? How can you maintain Dharma unless you know what it is? And you can only find out from the Brahmins. So you must have found out what the Dharma from the Shastra is. Dharma Shastra from the Brahmins. So you have to have knowledge to be a Kshatriya. Our idea of a Kshatriya just goes around beating up people. That's not a Kshatriya. Sorya Teja Juti Daksha Yudecha people are, you know. Dhanam Ishvara Bhavascha Kshatriya Karma Sabhavascha. The Kshatriyas have to have qualities. Heroism, Shorya, they have to have power. Teja Juti, they have to be determined. Sorya Teja Juti, so. Daksha, yeah, they have to be expert.
Does, right?
What's that?
This is what Kshatriya does. He just walks around and beat up people.
You think that?
Yeah, you said that.
That's not, that, no, I said that's not what Kshatriyas are.
Yeah, that's not what they are.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's part of, I mean, they just, they don't beat anyone up. If they fight, it's all going to Dharma. They're just going, I don't like your face, let's get into a fight. No, they're dharmic. They know Shastra, they know how to act. They know how to act religiously. They know, even in the fight, they have some principles they follow, according to Dharma. But outside of that, they're charitable, they know who to give charity to. They know how to arrange so many things. When Yudhisthira Maharaj was, when Bhishma was leaving his body, Krishna sent the Pandavas, especially Yudhisthira Maharaj, to learn Dharma from Bhishma, Dave. He's one of our Mahajans. So it's not so easy to run a kingdom, dharmically. It takes extensive training. Even Ravana, Vibhushana, what was his name? who's Ravana's brother, Vibhishana. Vibhishana was sent by Lord Ramachandra to Ravana to learn how to run the kingdom properly. Ravana did die all at once, so he had to impart the knowledge how to properly run a kingdom. It takes a lot of intelligence and knowledge. Anything else? Yes.
First, when now came to my mind this question when you mentioned Ravana and his brother, but wasn't Ravana, I can't even hear, it was Brahma?
He was born with a Brahmin father.
But his brother was Kshatriya.
No, his brother Vibhishana was also. They were all born in a Brahmin family. But obviously Ravana had a few problems. Kumbhakarna also. But you know, he happened to be the incarnation of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, so they had a few problems. Like he used to eat Brahmin sometimes. He didn't have very healthy eating habits, so he became degraded. But his father was, you know, was a Brahmin. But that doesn't mean that he was a Brahmin. He ate Brahmins.
What was their mother, Kshatriya?
His mother? I don't know. I don't know who his mother was. I'm not so sure.
When you mentioned that we often hear this, that we don't own anything, nothing belongs to us. Yeah. Is this statement refers more to this material world or probably also in a spiritual sense, in our position?
What can we own in the spiritual world? Everyone there is alive. Everything is based on love there. There's no sense of, you know, this is mine. Krishna comes into your chintamani. Someone comes into your chintamani home, say, get out. It's not like that. Everyone there is some. They don't. I don't think they have the same. If you have a spiritual body, you're eternal. You got to live with someone eternally. You really have to have nice relationships with them. Any attachment to I and mine, it doesn't really exist there.
Well, because we hear, for example, one sort of moksha is to gain the same opulence as Krishna.
Yeah.
Or, for example, cow boys and cow, they live in houses there, probably they consider them there.
Yeah, but the houses are also alive. Everything is alive. Everything is conscious there. So I don't know if the house is going to agree. No, I don't think they worry. They're just always meditating on how to serve Krishna. I don't know if they have this conception that this is mine. You know, it's all Krishna's. Krishna's the only thing in their life. Even it says that Krishna comes and steals the yogurt even in this. And you know, but actually they want Krishna to come. Krishna comes and steals the yogurt because they're praying to Krishna to come and steal their yogurt. That's why they make the yogurt, so Krishna can come and steal it. But, you know, because it's, they have to have put up a fuss about it, otherwise it would seem quite unnatural. It's part of the rasa to complain about it. But actually they make the yogurt, even the cows give their milk so that they can make the yogurt so Krishna can come and steal it.
They then have some sense of some ownership, but different than
here. Yeah, it's different. I mean, they don't really take it seriously. They know everything is for Krishna, to please him. But they have to, you know, at least in Krishna's Bhoma Leela pastimes here, there has to be some sense, coming at more like a human kind of attitude towards things. Else it would be kind of, it wouldn't go on the same rasa. But they all love Krishna. Krishna is the center of everything there. Therefore everything is done for Krishna. With some kind of flavor behind it, you know, like, it's mine and Krishna's stealing it, but actually they like that deep in their hearts. That's what they're waiting for. They're praying that Krishna is going to come and steal it. Anything else? Kala Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Kijai.